This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios,
the belly of a whale,
in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast. We've got some noises today, Rod.
We do.
There's a new noise coming from upstairs. They may be cleaning a whale.
Producer J-Dubs has got some severe indigestion from a cheesesteak visit, which we made.
There's something
yesterday.
Going on. Watch What Happens Live is going on at the Embassy Row Studios in another studio, but they're having to screen it out here.
But so, who cares, David? Because we're back.
Yeah, we are back.
And we're worse than ever. God, we're awful. We are. We're worse than the chain smokers.
Yeah.
Davo.
I like the chain smokers.
Davo, but we're worse than them. Think about how bad they are.
I'm friends with their manager. Can we cut that?
No.
Okay, good.
It's the only thing that is in our in our anals, in that same
part
kind
of
anal ether.
Thank you, Sony. very happy about the chain smokers.
Fantastic work, lads. Yeah. You look good. You're back. You've been playing the golf. Mm-hmm. You're at your boys' trip.
Yeah, the golf. I've been playing
the golf. Yeah, you've been playing the golf.
I've been playing the golf.
You are the master of boys' trips, David.
Yeah, I have a lot of grandfathered trips. You know, when I was married, it made a lot more sense to have all of these grandfather trips. You say, oh, yeah, but I've been doing that trip for 20 years. I've been doing that trip for 15 years, doing that
Tradition.
Trip for 11 years. Now
Ritual.
I have no reason to
life.
Have grandfather trips whatsoever. But, yeah, this is my annual trip that's been going on for, I don't know, maybe 15,
Since
16 years.
Since you met your
years,
second wife.
down at Joe. Going on down in Kiawah Island, South Carolina. Ran into a few GFOPs down there.
A lot of them.
In Kiawah Island.
Gamecock
who said, oh,
territory.
My God, you really do come down here. You don't only talk about Kiawah and Charleston on the pod. Hello to you guys. It was nice to meet you. Enjoyed that. Yeah, golf is amazing. Kiawah Island, I'm not paid to talk about Kiawah Island. It is paradise. It is beautiful. There is nowhere else in America, I dare say the world, that you can go on a golf trip and play so many outstanding golf courses. The Ocean Course, Rog, I know you love a Pete Dye golf course.
I think
he's a bit of a sadist, Pete Dye. But this, I gotta
got
tell
Eli
you,
Roth
ocean,
coming in.
The Ocean Course is
he's
something.
The Eli Roth of golf course creation.
The Ocean Course is something special. I've played it so many times, Rog, this course. I know, like, I almost have code names for the various wins. Oh, this is an AC square root of 4x5 that we're dealing with today. It's going to be very, very difficult. You know, once you come in, starting hole number 5, it's going to be very difficult until you turn around the other way on the par 3, number 14. It just is. But every time you play it, the wind is slightly different than you think it's going to be, and it just plays with your mind.
And no matter how many times you play it, you always walk off like a character on Arsenal fan TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Blood and fam on that seventh hole.
Yeah.
Blood and fam. Here's what I want to ask you.
Yeah.
What is the secret to a great boys' trip? Because you love them. I shun away from them like I shun away from all people, really. But what is the secret to a good boys' bringing the treacle trip?
You've got to go away with people you love. I mean, that's the number one thing. It can't just be like, oh, this guy's quite good at golf, let's bring him. You've got to go away with guys you love who are into doing the same things, legal, illegal, semi-legal as you, and you've got to go away with them, have a great time. And it's never going to be about the quality of the golf. Playing great golf courses is good, but you can have a much better boys' trip with the right pile of boys playing crappy golf courses if you're having a great time.
I need to get a boys' trip with people who just want to sit in silence and read books.
All about the Holocaust.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
My guess is that would not be a great boys'
trip. In it
to
win it.
That would not be a great boys' trip.
I'm actually going on one this weekend
with
my best mates from the year zero. We're going to Park City. I'll report back. There'll be a lot of book reading. I did just buy... Did just buy a fresh batch of the old Holocaust books. But I'm back, David.
Yeah, you're back from Israel, your boys' trip.
From my semi-annual Mossad top-up training, which is still, Israel, still the land with some of, I can report, the oddest place urinals I've ever come across.
Yeah.
Seem to favour really tiny urinals, and they seem to love to place them really high up and jam them into odd corners of the toilet.
Yeah.
So you have to approach them at acute angles, often on tiptoe. If the X Games... And I know the X Games guys listen to the pod, great friends of the pod. If you ever want to move into the extreme urinal challenge business, just as a competitive kind of approach, you've got to host the first edition in the Negev Desert. It's where I was.
Was this specific to your Mossad top-up training, or is this just a general thing
just
in Israel?
Everywhere. Okay. Everywhere you go into your average kind of gentleman's bathroom,
Yeah.
And they just have, like, on ledges, the bathroom. It's, like, always about 5 inches too high. The toilets are teensy by American standards. It's just, it's stressful. It's incredibly stressful.
Can I make one comment about the South, by the way? This is a massive overgeneralization.
South of
probably,
Israel or the South of
no,
America?
No, the South of America. This is probably as much of a generalization as your generalization about Israel. But one thing I do notice about the South
big
is there
urinals.
Is a...
Big urinals.
Well, no. Very, very low toilets.
Yeah.
Like toilets which seem to be lower, less inches off the ground than toilets in the Northeast and the West. But the mattresses, the beds are much higher off the ground. Particularly the Sanctuary Hotel in Kiowa. The beds are so high, it's sometimes tough after walking 36 holes. Quite tough to get up there onto the bed. But then you get out of bed and you need to sit down, which at our age you have to do it quite a lot. And you have to go very, very low to the ground to sit down on the toilet.
I can't stand hotels where the correlation between bed height and toilet height is so skewed. Oh, I will say one thing about Israel.
Yeah.
It's football mad. Mm-hmm. Premier League football mad. I spent some time at Hapoel Be'er Sheva. Mm. Wonderful, amazing story. Google
it. I thought you were going to say MLS football mad.
The success of a football team, that team, through savvy investment, changing the self-image of the entire desert region in the south. Fascinating football culture. Actually had some of the fiercest pickup games I've ever played on Tel Aviv Beach.
Mm-hmm.
They've got this kind of polyglot of cultures there. The Western European, ton of Russians who've moved in, huge number of Moroccans, and some of the most arrogant French people I've ever met, which is really saying
something.
All hacking away wildly on the beach. It was fantastic. Uh-huh. One more note on Israel, and then we're going to get down to it. Mm-hmm. It's a packed show. Must watch on Netflix. Fauda.
Yeah.
Oh,
you love this show.
I do love this show.
You can't stop talking about it.
Maybe because it's got a power ball
at
the centre as the protagonist. It's about an undercover Israeli extraction unit who work in the West Bank, told from the Israeli and the Palestinian perspectives. It is a phenomenal series. If you watch it, dear GFOPs, make sure you have it in the subtitle version and not in the dub version, because dubbing ruins everything apart from the Men in Blazers show, which it would improve. We should dub the Men in. We should do one episode where it's just dubbed.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing. Talking about the Men in Blazers show.
Yeah.
We back.
Yeah.
Got a glut of TV shows upcoming starting this Thursday.
Ugh.
After the Manchester Derby, the big one. 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure not to set your DVRs for all our upcoming episodes. Monday, May 1st, 5:30 with special guest, dear friend, great friend of the pod, Guy Ritchie. Coming on to talk about when it is okay and not okay to dispense with socks, David. We're going to go deeper on that issue.
Speak Hebrew.
Dear to your heart.
Yeah.
And Monday, May 8th, 5:30 p.m., we're also going to be sullying your screen. We are the only thing in America which is worse than United Airlines customer service.
Where am I going to find the time to make all these TV shows, Rog? I don't know, but I'll be there.
Oh, I love you, David.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, one other note.
Yeah.
Thanks for all your submissions to our People's History of American Soccer Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Eagle there. We've had so many posters, patches, vault balls, pennants, all the American soccer memorabilia that's filling up your finished basements and attics. We're pulling them all together to create a museum of footballing memory. Got a page on our website highlighting some of the choicer exhibits. I love the letters which you send accompanying them. GFOP, Jay Hinton, sent us a DC United 1995 goalkeeper jumpsuit. Yes, a goalkeeping onesie, which I'm going to try and slip myself into. He sent it with a note saying, "Thank you for what you're doing. You're saving marriages by building this museum," which I love.
That's amazing. I've got some old Cosmos stuff. I've got to go and look into that. I've got some very good Cosmos stuff.
I'm going to try and jam you into that onesie.
I would quite enjoy being jammed into that onesie. I think, Rog, all GFOPs who have Striker, the World Cup pup cufflinks, and Marcelo Balboa mustache oil that they want to contribute to this soccer Smithsonian. Are we building this in my basement in the Hamptons?
We're building it right now.
Oh, we are.
Okay. It's all over the office. It's
okay,
amazing.
You can send them to us at Embassy Row, 7th floor, care of Men in Blazers, 325 Hudson Street. That's Ray Hudson Street, New York, New York, 10013. Embassy Row, 7th floor, care of Men in Blazers, 325 Hudson Street.
Ray Hudson Street, New York,
10013. We should actually petition the mayor to have
a brown
Hudson
sign.
Street. The stretch of Hudson Street in the crap part of Soho.
I love that idea.
At Van Damme, to call it Ray Hudson Street.
That's
right here.
Amazing.
Should we start that campaign?
J Dubs.
I could have got
Bloomberg
to do it.
We need to find out how that happens. In New York, if famous people like Dizzy Gillespie or whomever live somewhere in a part of, like, where I live, it's named after Isaac Bashevis, a singer. It's like whoever is famous, they put up a brown sign on the street and they rename it kind of celebratory, symbolically after that person.
Yeah, it's like Peter Jennings Way up on West 66th Street. We can go and do that. We can get Ray Hudson.
It would be magisterial. We will send you a patch in return for your memorabilia when you send it to us, and we will protect it and just wallow in it like as if it's a DC United goalkeeping onesie.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got a packed show, David.
We do. We're going to touch upon the Premier League, FA Cup, the Championship, MLS, La Liga, Champions League, and Hector Bellerin's new haircut, Rog, all within the next 7 hours of podding. We don't have 7 hours to pod. We've got Eli Roth coming in. However, Rog, now to the football. It's time to crack open a Guinness. Pour into your Guinness glass. That's what you were asking for. There was a lot of pointing going on there, which I didn't understand what it mean. Crack open your Guinness into the Guinness glass. Rogelio. Exciting times.
Dave, glad to see not much happened while I was away.
Nothing.
We've only gone and got ourselves a title race.
Yeah.
Or more accurately, in my mind, the illusory mirage of a title race. Though 9 games to go. The gap between Chelsea and Spurs, 13 points. It's now just how many, Davey?
4 points.
But for Spurs to do this, and by do this, I mean close that gap, Chelsea don't have to drop the required number of points. But Pochettino's side must remain perfect, which would require extending their winning streak to 13. A massive, massive kind of record-tying number. It's really all in the ether of one of Jim Carrey's "So You're Telling Me There's a Chance" quotes. And if Game of Thrones has taught us anything, it's never to get too excited about a fight between the ogreish mountain and the swashbuckling viper. But let's unpack it all. What's happened while we've been away, Davo? To football.
To football, Roger. Oh. We are anywhere between 32 and 34, 38 to the Premier League season, depending upon who you support. For many of you, that will reduce to 16 and 17 19ths. We're poised for a finishing stretch, Rog, that features Premier League football on 19 of the next 26 days. I'm already exhausted thinking about it, Rog. First of all, FA Cup. We'll get into the nature of the title race in just a mo with Chelsea in action as we pod, Rog, against Southampton and Spurs poised to take on Palace tomorrow in South London. But first, we've got to recap those teams. Avant-garde, 1-2, FA Cup, semi-final, Battle Royale at Wembley, Rog, from the weekend. It finished Chelsea 4, Spurs 2. A goal of the season competition condensed into 90 minutes sees the league leaders overcome their pursuers in what was a phenomenal game of football, Rog, from both sides, with English football's biggest stars, some of whom are actually English, Rog, amazingly enough.
I don't
shining
believe they really
amazingly,
are,
I'm brightly.
None of them are.
That was amazing stuff, Rog.
Yeah, it was an odd jump cut in the Premier League title pursuit. Mm. A spin-off, FA Cup semi-final special. Only the second time since the Second World War that the first and second place teams have gone head-to-head at this stage of the tournament. And we approached a game of anticipation. It's hard to believe that now. But Chelsea arrived after tripping over the banana skin, the evil banana skin known as Manchester United, where Jose Mourinho had dug into his old book of dark arts, which has long empowered him to deconstruct, parry, nullify and destroy elite opponents. Once asked Jose if it gave him as much pleasure to negate as to create, and he laughed at the very question and just told me, "Of course," as if I was a moron, which is actually both are true. But holding holding Chelsea to 0 shots on goal for the first time in a decade. Mm. I mean, for Jose, it will have felt like his version of a pie orgy for Sam Allardyce. Mm. But as a result, Conte benched Eden Hazard, whom he labelled occasionally selfish, and the suddenly constipated Diego Costa. So I've got to ask you, ahead of kickoff, Davo, how did you feel?
I knew that, I mean, Chelsea, one thing that Chelsea have done well this season is they've bounced back when they've had wobbles. They've done that very well, did it after
you
the
love
Palace
bounce back
I love
ability.
Bounce back ability.
You do, more than anything.
And I felt,
more than winning and losing, you love bounce back ability.
You know, there was another story, subplot going on behind that game against Man United, is that Chelsea were flu-ridden throughout that game. They had a sort of a virus that ran through the team. Remember, at the end of the season, one of the reasons that end of seasons in the Premier League get really interesting is that everybody is starting to get exhausted. This fixture congestion, even Chelsea, who have played you know, not that many games because they haven't played in Europe, but they've gone quite far in the cup competition, so they have played quite a lot of games.
And the herpes just runs rampant.
It does, yeah, amongst
the clap.
At some teams more than others, amongst some players more than others. But Chelsea, a little bit flu-ridden, certainly came out somewhat static. But Cahill, after the game, I think he made a real thing. You know, the players, we don't feel good about it. We're going to bounce back out. And I did feel
after
that Chelsea...
game.
Yeah, I did feel that they were going to come back pretty hard. But it really set up for a great game of football. Because
fantastic
this
theater.
Is about more than just the FA Cup. This, of course,
exactly.
is about the Premier League.
Exactly. And you felt that. If you felt like this was just players at their elite levels just wanting it. And it was really a battle, a psychological battle, about who wanted it more. Because Pochettino and Conte... we know them as tactical genii, but this semi-final from the first whistle was just full-on blood and thunder, open-end football, exhilarating, no-holds-barred crap. I mean, elite athleticism fused with telenovela plot writing in which each of the major characters had their role to play.
Yeah, and before the opening whistle, Rog, just the team selection... Spurs, you know, everybody's saying, like, what kind of teams are these people going to put out there? Because surely they're going to rest their players and rest them for the Premier League. Spurs put out a pretty impressive side, but they play Son at left back, which is a fairly bold decision going into the game.
More foreshadowing of doom
exactly.
to come.
And Chelsea, you know, yes, you can come up with a reason. Oh, it was his performance against Man United, why he was dropped. I think that, you know, he just wanted to give Eden Hazard and Diego Costa a bit of a rest. And that was a fairly dramatic.
Kick up the arse.
That was a fairly dramatic decision to go and leave them on the bench.
And we felt dramatic. We felt bereft as Chelsea fans, I would imagine. But within 4 minutes, what happened? Eden Hazard's replacement, Willian, if you could believe, was playing. Just lashed a free kick, David. Lashed it past the stunned Hugo Lloris. Nowhere near the ball.
Yeah, it was a. It was a. You know, Willian has he's come back his. His free kicks of the 2015-16 season have now returned for
his
a little
YouTube
cameo.
Trick shot comps.
Exactly. They've returned. Hugo Lloris seemed to be crouching the wrong way, you know, just before he took it. But
did it feel like the law of scoring too early was in play, David?
Oh, yeah. I think Men in Blazers immediately tweeted too early. That was you. But I was
guilty.
Thinking... but I was thinking
it's
the same
wishful thinking.
However, this
you were,
is...
You were though, weren't you?
Yeah, but this was a little bit... You know, in the Chelsea, this was the third time Chelsea and Spurs have played this season. And in both the games, both at Stamford Bridge and at White Hart Lane, Spurs started very, very quickly in both those games. And Chelsea couldn't really get on the ball. And Chelsea came out. And I thought for the first, you know, certainly for the first like 10, 11 minutes of this game, Chelsea came out like really like driven on fire. Trying to knock it up Tottenham a little bit.
They were
bit.
Trying to thrill Spurs with their pressing, just preventing Spurs from doing what they love, which is to play the ball out the back. But there was a slight frenzy to Chelsea's play, slight miscalibration, demanded an over-reliance on physicality, and that physicality was punished in the 18th minute. And who was there to stoop the ball with a flicked header past Ake and a flailing Courtois?
I'm not sure it was even a header. It may have only been done with his hair and not with his head. Roger, I think there may have been some just sort of extreme boots hair product involved in that. But what a goal from Lord Harry Kane. Oh, he's a lord now. He's not even Sir Harry of Kane. He's Lord. He's going to get a peerage, Rog.
It was astonishing, man. The precision. It was...
He's English, Rog.
I don't believe he's
English.
I'm going to start
that
a Bertha campaign.
That
I think
was
he's
a
Kenyan.
Goal.
I think he's Kenyan.
That was a goal scored by... an Englishman.
No.
Like Kevin
Keegan.
I want
to see a passport.
Remember that curly perm that Kevin Keegan used to score those amazing headers with?
Yes.
He used to have sort of perm-assisted headers.
Yeah.
This bad Liverpool player back from the 1970s. I got to tell you, this was a goal that I have not seen an Englishman ever score.
All right, I'm going to take a Trump playbook piece here. Show me a bloody birth certificate, Harold Kane. I don't believe it because, I mean... That was a John Nash beautiful mind goal. Angle, deflection, wind speed, trajectory, velocity, hair fluff. I mean, it was just an astonishing feat.
I cheered it, Rog.
I cheered that goal because... No, you can't help when your nipples tingle. You have to cheer.
As you know, I've said this before.
And if your nipples didn't tingle with that goal, you're dead, man.
I'm football first, England second, Chelsea third.
Oh, no, you're
it
complicated.
It is very, very hard to watch Tottenham right now. The title race, this FA Cup final... Because I find myself cheering for Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Eric Dyer,
Danny Rose,
Carl Walker.
You're the last great Englishman, and this is your
so
Sophie's
difficult.
Choice. It is your Sophie's choice.
And then as a football lover, this is just great football.
It is
great football.
And it would get greater. By the way, Harry Kane, amazing stat. He just loves to score. That's how he does it. He just loves to score. And he loves big goals. Mm. Since 2015. What do you call him? Lord Harold?
Lord Kane.
Lord Kane.
Of Stoke Newington.
Scored 21 goals in 24 London derbies or comps, which is astonishing. Chelsea seemed shell-shocked for a minute. They couldn't move the ball past the halfway line.
Yeah.
I mean, I started to pity them a little bit, Dave. And just when that pity muscle kicked in, when it seemed like Spurs were in the ascendancy, not just in this FA Cup semi-final, but surely in the Premier League balance of power too. What did Chelsea do? They counter. Moses runs a curious wing-back, Son.
Yeah.
He made a tackle, Davo, which I can only describe as worse than his handshakes.
Yeah, it was forwardy. His tackle was very, very forwardy. Stone-cold penalty.
Was it a stone-cold penalty?
Yeah, it was a stone-cold penalty.
Was it? Was it a slightly divey?
Well, I don't think it was that divey. I think there was a lot of sun leg there to go over. Leg. It didn't take. He could have fallen. He could have got tripped. He could have. You know, you don't have to take the challenge at the point that leg is up in the air and right at you. And in the end, Willian knocked it straight through. Let's just say it was a very clumsy challenge.
What you're saying is Son essentially emailed Moses a paperless post invitation to take a tumble.
Exactly.
Oh, Spurs equaliser for me. Gonna say this. Goal of the season.
Yeah, it was the goal of the season.
Was it? You saying that with a question mark?
No, well, the only thing I'd say about the goal, and believe me, it was a fantastic, fantastic goal. This game was just blessed with amazing goal after amazing goal after amazing
goal. A great
goal.
Master match direction. If you didn't see this goal, Eriksen's pass.
Yeah.
It was like a remote-controlled drone strike dropping with inch-perfect precision behind the suddenly exposed Chelsea back line for Dele to smash home.
Yeah, I'm going to say the reason why there's a slightly controversial thing I'm going to say right now. This may be just like an over-pro English thing. But the reason I think that was such an amazing goal is I don't believe for a minute that Eriksen intended to deliver that ball to him on the half volley. I believe he intended to deliver that ball onto his head. I don't think it actually was a pinpoint accurate cross.
We'll never know.
It's just not the kind of ball that you intend to deliver into the half volley, because you can't imagine you would beat a defender
in
that way.
It was like watching a Blake Bortles pass. It was inch perfect.
In the first quarter or the second quarter, probably not in the fourth. But the fact that Dele Alli managed to take that and so nonchalantly, just firmly put that ball half volley into the right-hand corner of the net. Just fantastic, fantastic stuff.
Oh, to me, it was as close as football that will ever come. To an alley-oop and dunk. A Dele alley-oop.
Yeah, and at that point, I was worried. I wasn't worried after 1-1. At that point, I was worried.
Why,
David? From a Chelsea point of view.
Put words into emotions. Describe.
Because Chelsea had gone ahead once. Tottenham had pegged them back. They'd gone ahead a second time. And Tottenham have now pegged them back again. And they were dominant at this point.
Yeah, but I thought the same. I thought, wow, Spurs have suddenly taken on the ripple muscle of apex predators.
Yeah.
But then I remembered, David, there's no apex predator called a Spursy. Here's what I want to know, though. Watching Chelsea flail, especially up front, where they felt paper thin, I think we can both say that the Batshuayi era at Chelsea, that long-serving veteran of the club, we can say that's sadly over now after he was taken off deeply and effectively. But you watch them flail. They were up front, they felt paper thin. Were you just sitting there screaming, "Unleash Hazard! Unleash Diego!" Yeah. Or were you all just like, "In hair plugs, Conte, we trust"?
Well, no, I think it was inevitable that there was going to be a double substitution, and he didn't hang around very long
60
in
minutes.
Order to go and make it. And took off Willian, which was a bold move, I think. And, you know, Willian's movement isn't what it was last season. So he scored two very good goals. Well, he scored one very good goal, and he scored a very accurate penalty.
Essentially an NFL kicker. Is that what you're telling me?
He sort of is. And as those two stride onto the pitch...
Did it feel like the Knights of the Vale were coming?
It does. But I wasn't thinking it somewhat from a Chelsea perspective. I started thinking, how does this feel from a Tottenham perspective? Is that you've struggled back twice in this game, and coming off the bench is...
The heavy cavalry.
Yeah, the big bottom... And heavy cavalry, that's just Eden Hazard's arse. the big bottom small and Diego Costa coming on, and my God, that changed the game.
You know,
and then Cesc comes on as well. It's so...
Yeah, if you're Tottenham fan, you're like, bring Cesc on, biggie.
No, he's had a very good back.
But when these two come on, I'm thinking, basic man management, you drop a star player, humiliate them a little bit, and then you bring them on. But to be honest with Diego, I wasn't sure if it would lead to him being overmotivated enough to come and score a hat-trick, mm-hmm. or if he'd just walk up to his nearest opponent, say Toby Alderweireld, just walk up to him, punch his fingers right through his chest, and tear out his still-beating heart and start eating it.
Are you saying this didn't happen?
What?
I'm pretty sure. We don't have that many cameras to see every single moment of the game.
And with Hazard, Davo, very much a confidence player. You know, publicly shamed. Mm-hmm. Fascinating experiment for him too. And he stumbled around at first.
I don't see the dropping quite in the way you see the dropping, by the way. I know you want to read the public shaming. I really don't think at this stage of the season, I don't think many people view that as a public shaming.
He did say he's occasionally selfish. Not a team player, is how he explained it afterwards. Mm. But he seemed to ask himself as he stumbled around, do I fancy this? Is that kind of player? Do I fancy it? And then on 75 minutes, David, he decided, I fancy it.
Yeah, long-range corner scraps, as producer JW texted to me right after that happened. It was, I think, an underrated goal. A very, very good goal. Very clean finish.
Signature.
And drive just past Lloris, celebration.
Deliciously tucking it in inside the post. And then the coup de grace, Davo. Matic. Yeah.
Well, not
less
only
a goal,
Matic.
More an exclamation point.
A beautiful move. A really beautiful move. I just love it when players run backwards, back up the field during an offensive move back towards their own half. I actually thought that Hazard was doing a Pedro tribute from last season. I thought he was doing it. Hey, Pedro, look at this. I'm doing an impersonation of you for the whole of last season, because this is all you did, is you ran around aimlessly the wrong direction with the ball. He ran the wrong direction with the ball after taking it from Cesc. Rolls it beautifully out to Matic. I think the only criticism of Tottenham is they just maybe didn't close down quite quick enough, but maybe because they realised how hard Matic was about to go and hit that ball. I mean, he hit that.
Yeah.
He hit that ball hard, Roger. I mean, as I said earlier, I think that would send an NFL
scout
ball or scout flying. In every single, I mean, it would be a 120-yard field goal.
I've got to say, here's the only thing I can compare it to, the Matic goal. In the 1960s, there was a mafia hitman named Mori Prolerna, who I think was a failed minor league hitter. He'd become an assassin for the mob. And his favoured way of killing, apocryphally, was to ring the doorbell of his victim's home, wait for them to answer. And when they did, he'd smash their heads in with a violent swing of his baseball bat. And that is the act I thought about when I watched that goal, because Matic struck the ball with such violence that poor Kurt Zouma, a professional footballer who's seen it all in his rise to the Premier League, was just momentarily transformed into a giddy teen who'd had his mind blown. I mean, how did you feel when it went in? Because, again, it seemed to me that that goal had repercussions that far outstripped the tin pot tchotchke known as the FA Cup.
Maybe. I mean, look, I think that it is tough to think of a better goal scored at the new Wembley. But it was one of those goals that, you know, it's why we kiss football. I mean, we always say to each other, why do we not see goals like this scored more often? My mates Bruce and Joe, who are at the game with my nephews, Harrison and Luke, they just said this sort of like silence almost like overcame the stadium for half a second after it went in. Because people couldn't believe it, this goal. Alan Pardew, who they ran into the next day, former Crystal Palace, former Newcastle manager,
Were they in a place of repute?
Yeah, they were in a place of repute, absolutely, with Alan Pardew. Alan Pardew said about that goal that you can basically play your entire career and even in training never score a goal like that.
I've only scored that goal half a dozen times. That's how hard it is.
No, exactly, Rod. It's a goal that you don't even score in training is how perfectly struck.
I mean, to me, Chelsea didn't just score on the Spurs defence four times, the vaunted Spurs defence. With this goal, they emasculated them. I mean, forced them to ditch their big dreams and pretensions. It was like they were saying, you will always be Roger Clinton to our Bill. You will always be the Randy Quaid to our Dennis. I think the fact that it was Matic that scored it, the lumpen lolloping laggard, must have made it sting all the more.
Although when you do search for Matic wonder goal, more than the goal for Chelsea against Tottenham come up. He has scored a few wonder goals in his time.
Everton,
I know, remember that one.
Yeah,
he does score some sensational goals.
Fills my dreams.
When he puts the laces through it, Rod.
Talking about dreams, for Spurs, the dreams of the double. Haha. They're now dead. Already haunted by last season's late collapse, Dave. That is a club, when I was there, that you know, they talk openly about the psychological trauma of their failed chase last season, they will have spent a dark Saturday night in a room, clicking the bedside lamp on and off over and over again, riddled with the kind of gnawing self-doubt that can eat your valiant title chase clean up.
But that's not the noises that they were making after the game and the next day. Of course not. But I don't think that's the way they view it. And I think this is the difference in this Tottenham team, Rog. I think they're still up for it. I think they're still going for it. You know, the next day, Harry Kane and Dele Alli, I think both of them mentioned, you know, doing this for Uho Ekiog. You know, they're one of their coaches.
Wonderful man.
Wonderful man. Rest wonderful player. Wonderful coach who died and wanting to go and do something for him. And I think Pochettino said, now we're going to focus like fully on the Premier League race. And they are not, we can say, because narrative-wise, it sort of seems to be a nice story. Oh, the team that goes and wins the FA Cup semi-final, that's the team that's going to go and win the league. But just as if Tottenham could have won that game as easily as Chelsea won the game, I don't think it makes any difference whatsoever to the title race. I just don't think it makes any difference whatsoever. It's a very close title race. Chelsea have a small advantage. We'll see what happens.
Here's the challenge if I'm a Spurs fan. It's not just about the FA Cup. It's not just about this title race. It's about progression and the Pochettino. And the real challenge if I'm a Spurs fan, their crop of players is sizzling. Kane, Dele, Eriksen, Walker, Lloris. Such a great spine. So talent-soaked. But each of these individuals are ambitious and they want trophies. And if they don't get them soon, they are going to move on almost to a man. And the pinnacle of the game is calling these players. They want to get there with Spurs. They definitely want to get there with Spurs. But they will leave Spurs behind if the club falters and fails to summit without them.
Plus, even though I think long-term it's fantastic for the club, the stadium move, the new stadium they're building, as we've seen, you know, across Europe, it is very tough for teams when they move into new stadiums. It just doesn't feel quite like home.
Look at Arsenal, Highbury to Emirates.
Yeah, White Hart Lane is a very, very difficult stadium for opposing teams to go in. It's very tight. The atmosphere's very close. Tottenham have been amazing there at home this season. I think that looms a little bit as well.
Chelsea, 4-2 in a game Spurs dominated statistically, tactically, control-wise, but still 4 goals off 5 shots. I mean, they did what Chelsea have done all season at their best. They work out how to do whatever it takes to win, where it counts, with a phenomenal ruthlessness, a clinicality that's all too rare, definitely this season.
This is not the first time that Chelsea have beaten Spurs this season, having not played as well as them. And that is sort of about, in some ways, the quality that Chelsea have, which is they are clinical. Yes, Tottenham had more shots, but they didn't create that many more chances with all of that possession as Chelsea sat there. And this game is ultimately about putting the ball in the back of the net, except when you do it like Matic, you should have more than one goal.
Which has propelled the wonderful Chelsea team towards League and FA Cup double now in Conte's first season, a season that was meant to be all about Pep and Jose. It's been all about the maniacal Italian who was in touching distance. And this is remarkable, Dave. This, to me, is almost as remarkable as Leicester City's feat last season. He's within touching distance of a double in his first season in English football. It's a remarkable managing achievement. It's a remarkable human achievement. By the way, I had a dream last night. Need to run it past you. You and I were commentating on a game together at Stamford Bridge. While we were wrapping the game up, another Chelsea victory.
Yeah, probably not for NBC. Hashtag not invited.
The stands at the stadium
just
sank into the ground slowly.
Uh-huh.
And then were eaten up by it. Very biblical.
Huh.
What do you think it meant, David?
I used to have recurring dreams that I was playing rugby and I was getting swallowed up by holes or having to avoid the holes that were opening up in the pitch as it was going. There's something there.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear what's there. But for the record, in the dream, as the stadium sunk into the earth, you, professional broadcaster that you are, you just kept broadcasting.
Yeah.
The show must go on.
I'm very unimaginative.
One more stamp.
What did you do?
I tried to save people. Not that hard, but I tried.
That's so unlikely.
One more Stamford Bridge note.
Yeah.
John Terry leaving Chelsea.
Yeah.
Looking to extend his career in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Possibly with West Ham, Swansea or Bournemouth.
Yeah.
After Chelsea announced they would not renew their captain's contract at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
The man has gone from, I'd say, omnipotent to an afterthought, a Premier League Kellyanne Conway. But what a legend he's always going to be to those in the club, David.
I don't think Premier League Kellyanne Conway is a fair analogy. I just have to put that out there. He
once had it all.
You know, it's very tough with John Terry to put your feelings about his behaviour, both on the field and off the field, to one side. And you can't say, oh, you've got to just only judge him as a footballer. Because I think you've got to take everything in sum. As a footballer and as a Chelsea captain, he's remarkable. We'll never see anybody like this.
I agree.
We'll never see anybody like this.
22-year career through line.
At a Premier League team again. And not only for what he did leading from the back and as a defender, a very underrated passer of the ball, played with the ball at his feet so well. But the number of goals this guy scored from defence, I think more than 60 goals in the Premier League, Rog, which is absolutely astounding when you think how hard goals are to come by, even for strikers.
Amazing 22-year career.
Yeah.
Having to overlap with the Roman Abramovich transformation of the club, which enhances it even greater. Mm-hmm. When the news came out, I listened to his interview on the Men in Blazers pod when he came on with J-Dubs. And we talked about what it's like to be despised in the way he is. And he said he's gotten to a point where he loves to be hated. He takes it almost as a mark of pride. We're going to dig that interview up and I think re-release elements of it. But woof,
he can still put in a shift for a bunch of Premier League teams. And you look at, you know, playing central defence in the Premier League is very difficult. If Chelsea was playing four at the back, he would still be playing. He just cannot play. He can't. They've looked at him before. They've looked at him before. I got to tell you, he wouldn't be bad in that Everton defence.
Dennis Rodman came to the Bulls.
They still play four at the back. In a four-man defence, he's still...
I love Jags.
John Terry's a better defender. But in a four-man defence, he's still a very, very good player. And he'll score a few goals as well for you, Rog, for your little Blues. Okay, Rog.
I'm hitting my own head.
I know, exactly. If that, you're feeling me hitting it, even though you can see my hands over here. If that first semi-final was akin to a highly produced primetime network commercial for the FA Cup, the second was a little more late-night cable infomercially. Arsenal 2, Man City 1. Very little atmosphere, Rog. And Alexis Sanchez's extra-time goal sends Arsenal to their third FA Cup final in 4 years. It's going to be a cracking final, Rog. And gives the ever-diminishing Arsene in lobby hope the French manager will retain access to the nuclear codes for another season.
Oh, clash between two beautiful disappointments compared to the London derby, which preceded it. Mm. I mean, we've all worked in job settings where morale is down, layoffs are looming, fear, self-loathing, confusion dominate the workplace. Mm-hmm. I think both City and Arsenal are like that right now. Both squads need an overhaul. The players know most of them are surplus to requirements next season. I mean, this game was just a semi in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. Arsenal stumbled in with the memory of a 3-0 not fit to wear the shirt shellacking at Crystal Palace 2 games prior.
My.
Their new 3-at-the-back setup, which resulted, instead of the circular firing squad formation that Arsenal has stuck with for the majority of the season. So I say watching Wenger finally adopt the 3-at-the-back trend so late to the party, it's like watching a middle-aged man self-satisfyingly buy a pair of Crocs thinking they're the new cool thing. But in this game, with Olivier Giroud just ineffectually strutting around the final third, the wing-backs didn't do what they were meant to do, and instead they just ceded possession and initiative to City, who with their pace had loads of possession, little control. And Arsenal, they seem to resemble many of the foes that they actually hate. They were surprisingly physical in their approach, a lot of set pieces. It was all a bit Stoke from Arsenal in the first half.
Yeah, they're not looking like the team, even though I think the loss to Crystal Palace, by the way, Crystal Palace are suddenly looking like a top four team the way they're playing. But Arsenal just looking odd, looking disjointed, arguing, constant shots of them arguing with each other, looking just a bit, you know, arsed with each other all over the pitch. And some of the same stuff from City. Nobody looks happy playing with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it was like watching Downton Abbey's Lord Grantham have a fight with James van der Beek for the should have been a contender, where did it all go wrong trophy. Because City have so much talent, but little of it clicks. I mean, yeah, Toure, I was chatting to J-Dubs yesterday.
Yeah.
Seemed to just be wandering around thinking about how pathetic it is that Manchester City still depended on him. And the quality of the football was stilted. I was watching, it was as if neither team quite fancied earning the right to be utterly humiliated by Antonio Conte in the final. It's all like reliving Rachel Maddow's Trump tax return opening
monologue. It's like they thought they were on Fox Sports 2 in standard definition and didn't realise that they were in high def.
And as soon as they did,
City
scored. Long Kun Aguero break. Czech probably should have covered it if he wasn't like aged, withered and shorn of forward motion.
Yeah.
Do you feel pity for him watching him just stumble and flounder, David?
A bit. Great goalkeeper who's just not quite as sharp as he used to be.
He's like the footballing version of the Carl Vinson, heading one way when he really should be sailing to another. It's sad. But then City elected to shut.
May be the only Carl Vinson reference in world football. That's very well done, Roger.
City elected to shut. Not the game down, but themselves down.
Yeah.
Amazing. Invited Arsenal onto them. Ox swept in a glorious ball. Monreal swooped in, far post to finish first time with aplomb. And the game became so open, With big midweek Premier League games looming, neither side wanted extra time, but they couldn't even pull that off properly.
Yeah.
And on it rumbled, the desperation of a fight held over the moon door, tired legs, adding only to the general suboptimality of the event. And to sum it up, Dave, the quality of the football. Even worse than Hector Bellerin's cornrows. Can you explain
what's he done? Yeah, I think as you tweeted, a man with no mates.
I don't know. Like when your friends lie to you. How does that happen? I mean, I'm sincerely interested. I mean, neither of us have hairstyle versatility or flexibility in a locker.
Yeah.
But it was like an Aaron Hernandez tribute gone wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible haircut.
Too many yes men.
Yeah.
Thank God for Alexis Sanchez putting us out of our misery. Good dog. Slapped the ball home after Welbs then whiffed. At the real I am Mookie tweeted, Arsenal so much better when freed from the shackles of the Premier League surname font on the back of their jerseys. Uh-huh. How much happiness did you take from Arsene Wenger roaring with delight on the sideline, David? There's hope.
Well, there is hope. There is hope.
Hope for all of us.
And who knows, Arsenal, very tough to go through both teams in North London on the way to FA Cup. I mean, Arsenal, I'd say, are going to have... You know, Chelsea are either going to go into the FA Cup final having won the Premier League or having heartbreakingly lost the Premier League.
No,
I just don't know how they're going to go. I don't know how they're going to, like, get it up for the FA Cup final. Arsene could well save his entire season slash Arsenal career at this point by winning the FA Cup.
Let them eat FA Cup cake. I will say, watching Arsene Wenger roar in victory was like watching Ralph Wiggum roar with delight. On the sideline, it was really beautiful. Wenger out signs now appearing everywhere. Cavs playoff games on the Today Show at the March for Science. So the Wenger out sign has become like our era's Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
City out, perhaps harsh on them, hitting the post, the crossbar, having a goal wrongly disallowed. First time in his career, Davo, Pep Guardiola has failed to win a trophy in any of his 8 seasons as manager. That's not strictly true because he's still got his hand or one hand on the league title for the wearer of the manager's coat with most redundant zips award. But the club...
I could have sworn they won the Cuppity Cup.
Yeah, that was under 5 managers ago. I think that was Pellegrini, mate. I mean, they've just not gone forward, there you go. Post-game, he said, if people want to say this first year has been a failure, then they can say that. I mean, I'd say welcome to your tape, Pep Guardiola. But how do you understand Pep Guardiola year one?
I was watching, it was tough, it was after the Kun Aguero goal. I turned to my mate who I was watching it with and I said, how is Aguero not scoring goals like that every week? He is such a good footballer. He's such a competitor. He's such a good player. We should have seen him like doing that week after week after week after week.
I feel the same when I watch KDB.
In the Premier League. You're right, just so good. So these individual parts, I actually think that even he's made Raheem Sterling a slightly better player.
And Leroy Sané, don't get me started.
Yeah, no, he's got some really, really good players on that team. And yet, the sum of the parts doesn't quite work. You can say that about any team who aren't winning. You can go and throw that. But there really is something with all of those superstars. There's something very disjointed about that team. And I do think, ultimately, this was a guy who was not quite prepared for the physicality and the competitiveness of the Premier League. You know, friends who... I find this all the time with American friends of mine who go and watch Premier League matches live and they sit up close. They are blown, and they might have watched a lot of football. They might have watched a lot of football here, might have gone to South America, might have watched other places in Europe. When you watch Premier League football and you watch the top teams in the Premier League play, how physical that league is, it is mind-blowing. It's not like any other league in Europe in that way.
I couldn't agree more with you. It's less a failure, more proof of just how hard, how complex, how uniquely challenging life in the Premier League is.
Yep.
Pep now must face United on Thursday with both Sergio Aguero and beautiful, beautiful David Silva, doubtful for the derby. Oh, the big one, darkness on the edge of town.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking of that, Rog, top 4, fascinating stuff. 2 of the top 5 not involved in FA Cup action this weekend, Liverpool and Man United. We start at Anfield, where third place, but injury-plagued Liverpool, fell to Crystal Palace 2-1. Behind a brace from who else? Liverpool's former player, Christian Benteke, Rog.
Once again, Liverpool lose again to a lesser team. A coveted Willy Wonka ticket, Champions League place now dependent on the results of the teams around them. Salt in the wound that it was Benteke who did the damage. Damage goods at Anfield. Klopp killer in this game. He and fellow Liverpool reject Mamadou Sakho celebrated with a crap footballer handshake. Sakho's just out of Liverpool on loan. But Liverpool fans' deeper frustration is beginning to be targeted at Klopp for the first time, and his philosophy of winning on an economic budget is being exposed by the lack of defensive reinforcements down the stretch. It is so hard, Dave, to remember that this same Liverpool team, do you remember, first third of the season, swashbuckling tyros, just played balls out football, pitching wins championships. And this season, it's no coincidence that the two teams who could actually play defence, they're one and two, and it's been Liverpool's backline that's been their undoing.
Yeah, very much so. Quick word on Benteke, Rog. 14 goals, 2 assists for Benteke in 31 appearances. Of teams in the bottom half of the league, he's just right up there, everybody. Only Joshua King and Jermaine Defoe have equaled him in the number of goals they've scored. You know, he's scored more goals than any Liverpool striker this season. What a buy he has turned out to be. And he may well, certainly Big Sam gets some credit too, but Benteke with this sort of late goal streak might have saved Crystal Palace as a club from going down to the Championship. But, Rog, a team just 3 points behind Liverpool with two games in hand. Man United,
as
Rog.
As you predicted, they
Man
have
Man United, Jose Mourinho and co. marched on Fortress Turf Moor Sunday and won 2-0. Thanks to goals from Anthony Martial and Wayne Rooney. Remember those guys, Rog? It sets up a Manchester derby with massive top four implications this coming Thursday.
Oh, Marcus Rashford, born again. United have a pincer move on Champions League football. Could get there in their own right, could get there through the Europa League. They've been drawn against Celta Vigo, mid-table La Liga merchants in the Europa League semi-final. They had this workmanlike victory at Fortress Turf Moor in which Wayne Rooney continued his the Tiger Woodsification of Wayne Rooney. Yes, he scored from incredibly close range. My favourite moment was when he had a one-on-one break and just seemed to stumble, plummet and fall under his own weight. But they do look like they're going to nick a Champions League place. One way or another. Challenge for Jose, an injury-riddled squad. Big news, Zlatan's injury, a ruptured anterior cruciate ligament sustained in the Europa League win over Anderlecht. Age 35, reports out of Old Trafford bound between the snap will end his United career, or some are saying will end his career total, which would mean he'd finish up his fabled journey without ever proving he was good enough to win MLS Cup. I don't know if you can live with that level of regret, Dave. He's come to Pittsburgh to meet with Dr. Freddie Fu, and he's going to be operated there. But the English papers perpetually link him to a move to LAFC. What is his Old Trafford legacy in your mind? Because it's a bizarre one. It's been prolific, but it's still mixed.
I think Zlatan's legacy at Old Trafford, if this is it, I think he's been phenomenal for them this season. I think he's been superb. I think he's graced the Premier League. I think he's graced that team. He's scored some fantastic goals.
17 goals in the league.
Yeah, he's been very, very complimentary about the Premier League, you know, versus leagues around the world. I think he's great.
It's been a Landon Donovan-esque cameo. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, you know, he's been like a footballing Carmelo Anthony, an aging star who puts big points up night after night, but does so by taking so many of his side shots. I mean, he was actually capping their ability to succeed as a team. And the odd thing about the Zlatan story, he'd just been dropped to the bench, empowering United to better Chelsea with Marcus Rashford's young legs running the channels, making everyone around him look sharper, more clinical. If only he hadn't been dropped, David, we would put him on a pinnacle as a United legend. It's a really slightly odd, dark end to a wonderful man's career.
Yeah, look, I do think that if you want to get a little season preview of 2017-2018, watch that Man United versus Chelsea game and look at how United played. That is how Mourinho is going to set out to play football with this squad next season. And it's why, I think I tweeted during that game, long term, it's Man United who worry me.
On North Korea level, as
you
said.
Yeah, less so. Well, North Korea really worry me in life. I don't lie awake at night.
I'm more worried about Tottenham.
Worried about football. Tottenham, I'm more worried. Tottenham, I'm more worried about in the short term. Tottenham, obviously, this season. But Man United, the way that Mourinho started setting up to go and play against Chelsea, that's the way you beat Chelsea. That's the way you just take them out of football.
Huge game this Thursday. Jose Mourinho's men now within a point of Manchester City. Manchester derby, which was meant to decide first place in our pre-season imaginations, but is more now like two bald men fighting over who looks more like a beautiful bald. Who's going to make the top four quickly, Davey?
Well, I think it's going to be United. I think it's going to be City. I think it's going to be Tottenham. I think Chelsea might just sneak into the top four, Rog.
You do. Very gracious of it. I'll say it's almost impossible to say. We were laughing about this before because bar Chelsea and until now Spurs, the rest of the aspirants, they're also psychologically challenged / damaged. I mean, it has been like in the in-treatment Premier League HBO series. If I had to bet, Chelsea, Spurs, City, Arsenal. Yes, Arsenal, Davey.
Hmm. Interesting. Is there any? How do Everton sneak in there, Rog? How do Everton get into the Europa League at this point?
That's a sneak preview of the 2017-2018 March to Domination subplot.
Okay, Rog, let's go to the other end of the table. Angels. Time to put on our scuba gear, plummet to the table's depths, where Big Sam has once again proven his buoyancy ascending. Nobody ever doubted it. Why are anybody asking Big Sam to prove that he's buoyant? Ascending to the
witch.
Surface with Palace and leaving the likes of Hull and Swansea to battle it out for the right to travel to producer JW's beloved yet eternally mediocre, that's a Rog edit, Ipswich, next year.
Oh, how did you know? Oh, even with the world-class glove work of one Bradley Guzan,
yeah.
Middlesbrough now appear doomed. Alongside fellow North East self-harmer Sunderland,
yeah.
The relegation battle now seems like a neck and neck between Hull and Bob Bradley killer Swansea. His blood is on your hands.
Uh-huh.
With the Swans facing United and Everton, definitely have the tougher running.
Mm.
And America hates you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely Burnley looking back there, hoping not to get sucked in as well. Maybe even West Ham United still, Rog, not totally out of it. Meanwhile, next year's Premier League will contain twice
friends.
The Albion, Rog, as we welcome Brighton and Hove Albion and old friend Newcastle back into the mix from the Championship.
Yeah, Brighton, fantastic team from one of England's most romantic seaside towns. What a journey. The Seagulls finished 91st. In 1997 in the league pyramid, were homeless on the cusp of financial meltdown. 20 years later, they're back in the top flight. And last night, Newcastle and DeAndre Yedlin grabbed the second automatic promotion place. Fantastic for their long-suffering...
I think you should say DeAndre Yedlin and Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, he's the colossus.
He's bigger than the club.
He is. Yeah, he is. Not many players become bigger than the club.
Yeah.
He does. It's more than throw-ins now. He's quietly become the best right-back in the Championship. And I think it's great for football in the North East, which will be losing both Sunderland and Middlesbrough. What happens now for Newcastle depends very much on what Mike Ashley, the owner, does. He's very much to English football what Daniel Schneider is to the NFL in terms of self-destruction. What he invests in the team will decide whether cult hero manager Rafa Benitez can be persuaded to stay, and I think that's going to be key. Mm-hmm.
There's still a few teams in contention for the Championship playoffs. I love the Championship playoffs. Come on, Fulham.
Come on, Huddersfield.
Let's go and make it in there. Okay, one place with a not surprising paucity of Albion, Rog. The Champions League semi-finals, where 84-year-old rapping goalie and absolute legend Gigi Buffon leads Serie A's Juventus against French side Monaco. The other semi-final, an all-Madrid affair after Real defeated Bayern Munich and Atletico ended Jamie Vardy and Leicester's great European tour.
Commiserations, congratulations to Leicester. Eliminated with heads held high, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, very much so.
As English football's last representatives. Yeah. Even though every time the camera cuts to Craig Shakespeare, I just think that he looks like a financially beleaguered local family butcher.
Huh.
But, Atletico and Real, two teams from the same city, both qualified for the Champions League semi-final for three of the past 6 years. It's an astounding achievement. Something the teams in London and Manchester can only marvel at. Juventus, worthy semi-finalist after a staggering feat, shutting out Barcelona for 180 minutes of Champions League football. Chiellini and Bonucci were immense, and in the words of the vanquished Piqué, they built a mountain. Monaco, one of the most thrilling attacking sides in football, beat a shell-shocked Dortmund. I hate that UEFA forced them to play the next day. If you're in a trauma, you don't go to work the next day. How those footballers are expected to play football is a question that's almost crueler than the answer. Irrespective, Monaco-Juventus, it's going to be magic. Monaco scored three times in each of their knockout matches. Juventus have not conceded.
After advancing against Bayern midweek, Madrid fans, Rog, were brought back
Cocky.
To España and Earth with a thud Sunday thanks to a 3-2 injury time El Clasico defeat that saw Lionel Messi, Rog, at his bearded best, and Ray Hudson of Hudson Street and Van Damme fame.
I forgot about that. We've got to get on
at
that.
At his subtlest.
Well, he doesn't have to be subtle because El Clasico is actually Spanish, for those of you who don't speak the language, for tantric sex with Ray Hudson. And that translation, it was literal rather than euphemistic. It was a pulsating 90 minutes, culminating in drama. Sergio Ramos did what it said on the box and got sent off for the 22nd time in his career. But then James tied the game up at the death until Leo Messi, bloody of mouth, black of eye, found the ball after a phenomenal team move, drove it home, delivering a killer blow in the clutch with seconds ticking down and sending Ray Hudson into what can only be described as a delirious prolonged on-air orgasm. Again, the menacing man arrives and sticks his flaming spear into the hearts of Real Madrid. And he said, Messi, you could drop a tarantula into his shorts and he'll still be cool.
Yeah.
I think Ray was underselling it, to be honest. What athletes are like Lionel Messi, Davey?
Oh, I thought you could say Ray Hudson. by the way, just a very quick thing before we talk about athletes like Lionel Messi. I don't think we should just have Hudson Street in New York named after Ray Hudson.
The whole river.
The whole county. I think we should.
Ray Hudson Valley.
No, I think we should try and get. There must be Hudson Streets and Hudson Roads and Hudson Avenues across this great country. Let's try and get as many of them changed to Ray Hudson.
In your municipalities, if you know in your city, if you're in Cleveland or you're in Akron.
Yeah.
Those are very close.
Yeah, they're both in Ohio. If you're in Greenville and Alabama or South Carolina, just
if you know of a Hudson Street.
Or Hudson Road or Hudson Avenue, Hudson Close.
Don't even wait for your authorities to change it. Just
No.
You've got our permission, David, haven't you?
No. Email us. Copy your mayor.
Yeah.
And or local authority.
Yeah.
And let's start a campaign. Let's get every Hudson Street, Hudson Road, Hudson Avenue in the country. Let's start the campaign to get them changed to Ray Hudson Street.
Absolutely. And by the way, if the mayor says no, you've got my permission to just get a can of spray paint, pretend you're 15 again, and go tagging.
Yeah.
I love it. Send us photos of you tagging
Hudson Street.
All
too good.
Over the country. I'll answer my own question.
What athletes are like Lionel Messi? Well, Michael Jordan. Yeah.
In the clutch, I mean.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, when he's not wearing an Argentina jersey, by the way.
By the way, can I just say before you say that? Yeah. I was a wonderful young caddy, Jacob, who helped at Cacique and River Course down at Kiwa this week. He said to me, he's a big soccer fan, and he was saying to me, just imagine, what if our greatest athletes, talking about America, what if our greatest athletes played soccer? And I said, yeah, but the only thing with that is that Lionel Messi is the best soccer player in the world. And you can't think of another American sport that Lionel Messi would be playing at his size.
Chimney sweep.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very competitive, not a chimney sport. Sweeping.
I haven't checked ESPN 8 recently, but I don't see competitive chimney sweeping.
It's up there with competitive challenge urinaling.
Is that he's almost not like any other athlete, because I think one of the things that makes Lionel Messi
to A-Goose
so amazing is he's not that big. I love A-Goose. I love A-Goose.
The look on your face. I always get a joy.
If you've got an A-Goose street or an A-Goose road in your municipality, let us know. Let's change it.
The only Tom Brady is clutch. Michael Jordan, clutch. In golf, who's clutch?
Well, there really isn't. I mean, you would say Jordan Spieth, and
I think Fuzzy Zeller.
This Masters, he wasn't clutch.
Serena Williams, who's clutch. She would have scored that goal when she was 8 weeks pregnant. Mm. All I'll say is, listeners, we should never ever take it for granted that we are alive to watch Lionel Messi just routinely make the miraculous feat appear routine. It is an honour, and I never tire of it. And Ray Hudson. And I'll say Phil Schoen as well. Yeah. He doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah,
God, they only add to it.
Sets him up. Okay, Rog. Time now for MLS. It's not just their new digs that have Orlando City flying high, Rog. They stay atop of the... I love it. Jamlando. They stay top of the East after a 2-1 win at NYCFC's Rhombus this weekend.
It's the best Orlando 3 since Dennis Scott.
And rumours of Minnesota United's demise appear to be greatly exaggerated as the Loons get their second win of the season and their first clean sheet, 1-0 against Colorado at TCF Bank Stadium.
Oh, and in slightly less important MLS news, producers J Dubs, Lexi, Evan and I travelled south to Philadelphia yesterday.
Oh.
Sat down with Ale Bedoya, a man who's as forthright off the field as he is hard charging on it. Yep. Currently grappling with a union side, toiling in transition, search of their first win. So our conversation, it was a fascinating dive into the mindset of an American player who has been willing to grind his way through the European leagues. He was as phenomenal as the cheesesteaks that we ate at John's Roast Port right afterwards, but even more kosher. That pod drops on Friday.
Looking forward to hearing that, Roger. Okay, it's official, Rog.
What is, Davo?
Hudson Street. Renamed Ray Hudson Street. No. We're being a little early. The day after you left the country for Israel, the presidents of the United States, Mexico,
and
Canadian football, Rog, not the presidents of the countries, Canadian football, officially felt it was safe to announce a joint North American NAFTA territories.
Joint-ish.
While NAFTA still exists. World Cup bid for 2026.
And Mexico's going to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. With about, what, they're getting about three games, aren't they, Rog?
Oh, it is exciting. And it's probably real because we already know that the World Cup is not going to go to Europe or Asia.
We will see. Your weekend looks like this, Rog. A triple header of massive Premier League games Sunday, starting at 7 a.m. with a top four relegation tilt. Man United versus Swansea City. Then at 9.05 a.m., it's El Blazerico, Rog. Everton versus Chelsea.
Oh, I can't wait to get up at 6.05 Park City time to watch that beat down.
Yeah, with all of your friends reading your Holocaust books. And at 11 a.m., what a boys' trip. A battle that could, depending on midweek results, mathematically guarantee a St. Tottenham's Day leap year. Tottenham versus Arsenal at White Hart Lane.
Season without a St. Tottenham's Day would be like me not being depressed.
That's unlikely.
Can't even picture
it. I know. Later that day, in a slightly less storied rivalry, Atlanta United FC, Rog. I like my Atlanta United shirt. I wear it quite a lot. Host DC United at 3 p.m. Eastern on
Come on, Steve Birnbaum.
Sports.
The Bear Jew.
There are many other ways to connect to us. One is through Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon Fridays, big or small, stick off the Emporium page. Main place against tiny percentage labs, a couple of we're in a new show. What are you putting in Emporium this week, Rog?
A book.
Oh my word.
Jim Shepherd's The World to Come.
Uh-huh.
Which I just read. And I honestly want to do a pod just about it. It's a collection of short stories written about human beings grappling to succeed and ultimately failing, most often nobly. Shepherd is a phenomenal writer, and the beauty of the book is the meticulous historical research that he pours into these tales. I'm getting a copy for J-Dubs because it is right up his alley. He writes about the doomed US Navy force trapped aboard a collapsing offshore platform, which is a must-read. Hmm. A failed expedition to the Arctic in 1845, a must-read. A Second World War submarine suicide mission, oh my God, a must-read. And the Montgolfier brothers and their race to invent the hot air balloon. Everyone should read this book. You will be a better person for doing so. Jim Shepherd. Come on the pod. Come and talk to us about life.
A few more weeks to go in spring, Rog. Weather in the northeast. Cold day today. Little rainy. Hasn't quite warmed up as much as we wanted to.
It's like
to.
A Liverpool summer's day.
Depending on where you live in the United States, you've got a few more weeks to wear your suede. But I know at the end of the season, your suede starts to get a few little stains, a little bit of ketchup, a little bit of
a little bit of salsa,
a little bit of life. On your little bit of wasabi, it's what I've got, a bit of a wasabi problem, one of my suede jackets, Rog. So I've ordered myself a suede and Nubuck four-way brush and a razor and premium care kit, Rog, a bargain at $12.99. I've got to go and brush down my suede and get the stains off it once they've dried and congealed nicely.
I only wear wasabi-coloured suede jackets just to prevent
that reason.
Just for that problem. Oh, okay. It's good to be back, David.
Visit meninblazers.com to sign up for our newsletter, which we produce with our partner Guinness. We've got a new issue going out next week.
Big.
You can follow us on Twitter at meninblazers, at Embassy Davis, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram at meninblazers, at Embassy_Davis, on Facebook at meninblazers. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Not quite our kind, dear.
Oh, take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
It's a tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Where's my spray paint? I'm going to head down to Hudson Street right now.